Welcome, everyone, to the Healing of Agape this week. This is Eva Herr, and with us we have Dr. Dan Ward. Hello, Dr. Ward. How are you?
I'm fine. How are you this morning?
I'm great. Thanks. Before we get started, why don't you tell us a little bit about you so the listeners will know who you are and what brought you to where you are with consciousness in your life?
Oh, that's a tough one. I was educated, got a couple of degrees at the university, a Bachelor of Engineering Science and a PhD in Physics. But I never really actually got quite into the physics thing completely, and over the years I've just been exposed to a lot of other information, and I keep adding to it. Unfortunately, a lot of it's not exactly in the mainstream physics line, which doesn't exactly endear me to a lot of my colleagues, but, you know, it does it anyway. So I don't know that I've ever had any epiphany or anything, but I keep reading things and I keep looking at other possibilities and speculation. I guess I'm a theoretician at heart, and so consequently, when I come up with other things, I don't dismiss them because they don't fit the paradigm, but I try to check it out.
You have a very interesting website. What's your web address so that people can take a look at?
It's www.alexandria.org, and that's like Alexandria, Egypt, with an H in front of it, so it's Alexandria.
Why don't you repeat that again so we can cut this out? Okay. You know, that phone was off.
It's www.alexandria.org. Alexandria's Alexandria. It's actually like Alexandria, Egypt, but with a H in front of it.
Okay.
So what you end up is Hal Alexandria, and Hal, of course, with the crazy computer in 2001, A Space Odyssey.
Okay.
And that pretty well describes it, you know.
Yep, I know. I know what you mean. I'm in litigation. That's what my living is, and I don't have very many lawyers or judges that have parallel thinking to mine either. Okay. As you know, we're doing a multi-segment radio program that's going to focus on consciousness and issues of consciousness that I think are major issues in the world that need to be addressed today that haven't been addressed by science. For example, the Terri Schiavo issue, you know, and her level of consciousness and whether or not medicine believes she should be allowed to stay into the world. So the first thing that I'd like to ask you is, to begin with, if we have three levels of awareness, sensate, cognitive, and self, what do you think is the minimum level of consciousness to be present in the world?
I think you could have any level of consciousness to be present. If you're talking about specifically about Terri Schiavo, I don't think that that's a question of consciousness. I think that's a political question or an ideological one. Everything, there could be consciousness in a whole lot of other aspects of life that there are levels of consciousness, say, and that at some point it doesn't make sense not to continue a life which is not meeting its, you know, at least some minimum level. I don't know what that level is, though. I don't know that there was any consciousness left there at all.
What would your personal definition of consciousness be?
Well, it's not a simple definition. It's self-awareness. It's a totality of thoughts and feelings and the ability to sense. I mean, that's the simple one. But it's also awareness of the non-self. It's awareness of the rest of the universe. And if you want to have levels of consciousness, it may be defined as how much aware are we of the rest of the universe? How much do we know of the rest of the universe? How much are we sensing of the rest of the universe? And so that turns out to be extremely important, I think. The consciousness, and you had mentioned earlier, consciousness doesn't really get into physics very much, and I think it's mostly because it's too complicated. Physics tends to try to simplify things really well and get down to the fundamental aspects of life, but unfortunately consciousness doesn't yield to that. Consciousness is also, in some respects, the ability to take unconnected and, shall we say, chaotic properties or bits of data and correlating them into an ordered structure. And if you're unable to do that, there's nothing going on in that sense, if there's no correlation, if there's no ordering of what we're sensing, then there really isn't much of a consciousness, and it probably isn't. Now, the problem with that is that when you are increasing the order of something, you're trying to order something with consciousness, then you're basically doing something which is kind of anti-entropic. It's going against the second law of thermodynamics, which basically says that order tends to decrease. And consciousness tends to go the other way.
That's true, it does. Do you think that the mind thinks?
Do I think the mind thinks?
Mm-hmm. Maybe we might want to preface with that. Well, what is your definition of mind?
Well, I don't know. I guess it could be, I think the dictionary says it's the seat of consciousness. Then it goes into another half page or so, a whole bunch of other things. I guess, it's kind of a shorthand for whatever contains an individual consciousness. And that container, though, is not necessarily physical. I make a distinction between mind and brain. Brain is just, you know, the physical thing that we have stuck in our head.
That's right. It's a binary processor.
Yeah, absolutely.
So something has to process that brain. Something has to be fed into it to process. And what do you believe the source of that intention or that creativity would be?
Well, the source is usually the consciousness, the individual consciousness, if you will. And maybe there's beyond that, there's a collective consciousness. But the consciousness is intention and all these other things kind of derive from consciousness. I tend to make consciousness and mind pretty much the same. It's just easier to type mind than it is consciousness.
Do you think that the mind or the consciousness is contained within the electromagnetic field of the body?
No. I think it's much bigger than that. I think the mind is not really necessarily, should not be assumed to be in the body.
Mm-hmm.
It may not be contained at all within that. The electromagnetic field or the electromagnetics of the body are probably part of the body, and the mind may be utilizing that in some fashion, but I tend to think of the mind as actually being separate and basically using the body as sort of a spacesuit, but it still has access to things outside that spacesuit.
So when you say that, referring back to the question about whether the mind thinks or not, and you said that's the individual, really it's not the individual at all. It would be that source of creation, right? Because if it was individual, it would have to be something contained here with. So really it's the source of all there is?
Yeah, I would say, essentially, yes.
Okay.
Mind and conscious, it's the source of things. Whether or not it thinks, I think the body uses the brain's mechanism to think, but it also uses the body's mechanism to sense and doing all sorts of other things. And there may be other aspects of the mind or consciousness which is connecting with the other parts of the universe, which it doesn't use the brain or the body at all.
Mm-hmm. What are your thoughts on manifestation of intent to physical reality? And what I mean by that is things got created somehow. And people ask me all the time, if what you say is really true and we are really in charge of creating our own reality, why can't I manifest a car in front of my face if I choose to do so? Or an ice cream cone in my hand if I choose that I want an ice cream cone? So what are your thoughts on the manifestation of your intent of physical matter into physical reality? Is that clear?
Yeah, I think so. Well, on the one hand, I've always believed that the best way to, say, shall we say, predict the future is to create it. But you're living in a space-time continuum, if you will, and time being the critical thing. Time is a buffer, because if you have created everything that your mind kind of went to, you'd really have troubles.
Yeah.
You say, oh, man, I really won't got it. Sometimes you don't. And you need a buffer of time to kind of get there. And so it's a question, I think, of creating there's a couple of things. One, there has to be a focus. You have to focus on something over a period of time. And depending on what it is, it depends on how long the time will be. You also have to have...
Let me ask you a question on that. Why would you say depending on what it is will determine the amount of time it will take?
Well, I'm saying, okay, for example, let's say, let's take a health issue, cancer.
Mm-hmm.
If you suddenly are diagnosed with cancer, it's not sudden. I mean, you've been developing the cancer over a period of time. So it will take you a corresponding amount of time to get rid of it with the mind.
All right. What about a thing in physical reality? The reason I'm prodding on this is because I did another interview with one of the interviewees, and I don't think that it quite came across. Let's say you want a car. And so you think on this car. When's it coming? What will delay it or hurry it up?
Well, when you're talking about creating reality of that nature, one of the things, two things are involved. One thing is you have to have a really emotional connection to it. That kind of provides some of the energy for it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so you're focused and you're emotionally involved in it, quite frankly. The other thing is that your thinking or your assumption should be that you have it. If you're thinking about ways that might interfere with it, that just negates everything you've been trying to do.
Now, would you be of the opinion that... did I let you finish?
Oh, well, no, I pretty well had finished. Go ahead.
Okay. One of the things that I wonder is when we attempt manifestation with intent, I believe that it appears somewhere in the world. It's like you start out in your mind with a hologram of what it is that you want. And then you place intention and like a puzzle of a hologram. And then you place intention and the puzzle goes out into the world in pieces and you have to go and find those pieces, whatever they might be. Does that make sense? Say, for example, you want this car. So you think you want this car. And you have to look for the places where the pieces might be, for example, in the one ads in the newspaper, and on the internet, driving around your neighborhood. You think about the exact kind of car that you want, the exact color that you want, and somewhere it is. It's a matter to you to find it because you forgot to place, say, I don't know what other words to use, longitude and latitude. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, your garage. Longitude,
right.
Latitude, my garage. What you're really talking about is you seem to be concentrating, at least from my perspective, on the process of obtaining the car. And when you concentrate on that process, what you're doing is you're just keeping the process going.
That Rolls Royce will appear in your life, but it's up to you to state where it's going to appear. What I'm trying to do is give people a reason to believe us that manifestation of intent is real. I heard a story one time, and this story happens to be true if my friend is telling me the truth. There was a man that wanted a Rolls Royce, and he thought all of his life on Rolls Royces. Had pictures on his wall. Looked at every newspaper and magazine, and finally one day he saw in the one ads a brand new Silver Clouds Rolls Royce, just like what he wanted, for $50. And so he goes over and looks at this, and it happened here in Atlanta, from what I understand. And he looks at this Rolls Royce, and it's beautiful, in perfect shape. And so he gives the lady the $50, and after he has the transaction closed, he said, "Why did you do that? You could sell that car for $50,000." And she said, "Well, my husband left me for his secretary and moved to Florida, and the only thing he asked me to do was sell his car and send him a check." So the guy got his car, but he didn't get to drive it because he forgot to manifest the money to pay for the maintenance, insurance, and the tags. So it came somewhere in the world. He just had to go find it. So the point is, it happened somewhere.
I guess I look at it from the viewpoint that when you are trying to create something, you visualize it in your mind and include all the other aspects with it, like maintenance and insurance.
Right.
And you completely obtain this thought in your mind. And then you assume it's there. And then at some point, when you're in that mode, you attract it. In some way along the line, it, you will just wander through something, and one day it'll be there.
Attractor failed.
Yeah.
So my next question would be, I have this thing in my head, you know, I don't know how much you know about me, but, you know, I had a near, kind of a near-death experience, and I woke up with this gift, and the gift that I have is one of medical intuition and one of some kind of obsession with quantum physics, and I, like I said, I do litigation for a living, so I've never had an interest in that whatsoever. It was a spontaneous thing. And one of the things that I hear in my head, and again, I'm not a scientist, so I, you know, I may not have the right word, so you have to use some hermeneutics here. But I believe I can see pictures in my head of oscillating protons and electrons. And I know that a proton's a positively charged molecule, and I know that a an electron's a negatively charged molecule. Would it be logical to think that if you oscillated a proton, or a smaller unit thereof, for which I don't know the name, that you would manifest positive energy in your life? Because we all know that when a molecule oscillates, it transmits and receives at the same time. And if you were to oscillate an electron, then would it transmit and receive negative energy at the same time? Would that be why what goes around comes around?
I think if you're really focusing on something, and you get, in a way, what you're talking about, getting all the molecules in a frequency vibration that's attractive, you know, you'll bring something in. The difficulty is that there's two possibilities. Pick a hot fudge sundae. Let's say you want a hot fudge sundae. You really, really want to get a hot fudge sundae. And if you start visualizing it, it comes into your life. But let's say, on the other hand, you say, you know, I'm on a diet. I really don't want a hot fudge sundae. It will come into your life. The universe doesn't seem to understand no.
Correct. It doesn't. It understands that there's a hot fudge sundae.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't understand the yes or the no of it.
That's right. So the negative part.
It does understand the emotion behind it. And
right.
I think that emotion behind it would be what would cause that positive or negative molecule to oscillate and literally bring in positive or negative energy into your life.
Well, you don't even have to think of it. If you're vibrating in a positive way, you'll bring positive in.
I think science needs to address that, though, and I guess what I want to know is, do you think that's a realism? I mean, somebody in the world's got to prove why there's wars going on and not peace.
Well,
and why we make things happen, I mean, other than just the obvious fighting and running into other people's countries.
Well,
why intent is of importance?
Think of all the people who enjoy war. And that's a fair number. I mean, if you were to join the Army, you're an officer, say a lieutenant in the Army, man, a war is just the ideal time to go out and prove your stuff. I mean, some people enjoy that kind of thing.
Well,
and they really get a tremendous feel. You know, this is a very positive experience for them. If they're doing exactly what they want to do. That applies to a lot of people. A lot of us don't like it because we tend to catch the side effects of their little program. But that's really part of what's going on. It's a lot more exciting for a lot of people to have a war going on. And it gives a lot of people who are opposed to the war an opportunity for them to really express themselves. There's a certain excitement level that's going on.
Well, would that make any sense, though, that could happen from say, a negative and positive molecule? Could that be what makes, what goes around, comes around in your life?
I think I've always kind of gone along with what goes around, comes around. But
there's got to be a reason for what goes around, comes around.
Oh, yeah. And I think a lot of people want this. I mean, it's a certain amount of drama. It's the reason we go to movies. The movies with car chases and all that kind of thing, it's always exciting. There's something, it just kind of gets us all excited and interested and fascinated with some of the possibilities, and we do it. And on the other hand, we look at it and say, oh, it's terrible that people are dying because of this. And at the same time, we don't know for sure that maybe that was their intent. to spend the time in this incarnation.
Well, of course, because everything's perfect in consciousness.
Yeah.
But would that be a reason from a perspective of physics that that could happen?
I don't think physics really addresses the issue.
That's my point.
Yeah.
I want them to.
It doesn't want to, because it's like, ooh, it's the actual thing we have to remember about physics, the only kind of physics that actually gets addressed is where they can do the math. And if you really can't do the math, it's like they they can't work with it. They can't deal with it. They can't really create new physics from it.
What would your mind say about it? Would that be something that's logically possible?
Oh, yeah. It's totally logical.
I mean, it would make sense if there was a positive force field that made you feel good and a negative that made you feel bad, that it would oscillate one or the other. Something's got to cause it. Wouldn't that be logical?
I don't think, you're talking about negative charges and positive charges. And
okay.
Those aren't, I don't think you can use those in the same connotation as what is a positive moral value or a negative moral value.
Not moral value.
Yeah.
I'm talking about, say, for example, you're driving down the road and someone pulls out in front of you.
Mm-hmm.
You know what happens.
Oh, yeah.
That's something very nice. Well, what you don't know is that that woman that pulled out in front of you didn't even see you. She's on the way to the hospital to see her dying child.
Mm-hmm.
But because of what you did, she's going to go there and assault that ER physician. I'm going to sue you. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that because you don't save my child. Well, by the end of the day, it's 5 o'clock, and he's got this ranting, raving, screaming mother, and he goes home, and he rants, and he gets stuck in traffic, and he rants and raves at his wife because his supper's cold, and she screams at the kids, and the kids kick the dog, and the dog goes next door and bites the cat, and it starts all over and goes down the street and around the corner and around the world.
Mm-hmm.
You. Well, if you pass her and say, it's okay, I understand. She gets to the hospital, and she's on her knees thanking this man for trying to save her child's life.
Yeah.
He goes home, he hugs his wife, they cry over dinner, the wife hugs the kids hug the dog, and they all cry, and the dog goes next door and licks the cat, and it starts all over and goes down the street and around the corner, around the world, just to the view. Now, there's a reason that woman behaves one reason or the other, and it's because her electromagnetic field was tapped by something for her to change her behavior and behave one way or the other when she gets to that ER. There's a cause for that. And it's my goal to get physics to look at that call, because the only reason that the world is going to listen to what people like you and I say on our website is to get physics to say that it's possible. Because it's not tangible and the people don't believe it. They don't believe the power of their thoughts and how important they are in their world. So that's why I asked this question.
Yeah. Well, the power of thought is really intense. And that's why, I don't know why, but there are physicists that are looking into this, I should say. It's just that mainstream physics has not quite picked up on it. But anything new in physics always has to come in through a period of time, and you don't normally get too many things that come in and really take over very well. Physicists, they come from a very skeptical point of view. They're trying to say, okay, can you have any proof for this? And they would rather not actually even look at it for the most part.
Yes, I know that.
The difficulty is that believing is sometimes seeing, and vice versa. If they simply do not believe something, it's not going to happen. And what throws physicists quite is when they get something unexpected. And then if they can figure it out, fine. If they can't figure it out, they simply try to deny it. Mainstream physics has had a lot of trouble with something called the Einstein-Rosen-Podolsky experiment. It was just a thought experiment designed to disprove quantum physics. Well, they eventually did some experiments, and it proved that Einstein basically was wrong. Einstein was sort of he did not like quantum physics.
Mm-hmm.
As he didn't like the probability aspects of it. And this experiment came along and proved it. It was basically instantaneous communications between two particles.
Mm-hmm.
And the problem was that it exceeded the speed of light.
Right.
And if you look, the vast majority of physicists will simply not even look at this. They will not even consider it. It just disturbs them too much.
That's one of the reasons I think this is so important, this thing that we're doing here, because something's got to happen.
Well, there are people who are doing what you're talking about. There are people who are looking at this, you know, into a molecular level, if you will, who are actually, you know, having people concentrate on loving thoughts, and they turn out that their DNA is actually being modified. They can actually see changes, physical changes, from based on those thoughts.
Right. You know, I know Dean Radin's doing a lot with intentionality.
Absolutely.
All right. What is your perspective on karma and regarding manifestation or lack thereof in physical reality? Because another question that comes along, excuse me, for example, someone that's poor, that constantly focuses on being wealthy. You know, it's sometimes it's just not going to happen. And it's my perspective that the reason this doesn't happen, that you stay stuck in that slot of poverty for your life, is because that's where you're supposed to be in this life to learn the lessons that you're supposed to learn. And if you were outside that, you wouldn't accomplish the goal for the intent of your soul. That's the only thing that I can think of that would keep something from manifesting if you focused on it all the time. What do you think about that?
Well, I think you're probably right. The subject of karma, to me, has always been a kind of fascinating thing. On the one hand, you probably heard the old saying, my karma ran over my dogma.
Right.
And it's really very important, because sometimes karma does that. It something comes along and forces you into another mode. And who knows, maybe that's what we're all in the process of going through that. But karma, think of your coming into this life, this incarnation, with a script. And this is what your life is supposed to be going along with.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you do this, this will happen. So you're 13 years old. This will come into your life, and so forth and so on.
Right.
Now, the deal is, it's a script in that sense. But all of us have the ability to ad lib.
Mm-hmm. That's a good way to put it.
Yeah, we can forget entrances, we can forget exits, we can drop lines, we can add lines. Somebody else will drop a line, and we'll have to manifest something from there. And some people are much closer to their script than others. It just kind of works, like, you know, it all happens, and they just kind of go right down with it. But at any point, you can change it. Say you murdered someone in a past life, and you meet them again, and it's their turn to murder you. But maybe instead, they just go, I remember you murdered me in a past life, and I forgive you.
I would imagine that would have to do with the cohesiveness of your electromagnetic field, how together you are, and how what your ability is to remain in the moment.
Oh, well, it probably is, because in time you meet someone new sometimes. Sometimes you will, it's like you've been buddies for 10 years. I mean, you know them really well. You get together with them, and this is fantastic. I understand who this person is and everything. And it's probably somewhere along the line, your electrons are vibrating right along with their electrons.
Mm-hmm.
And there's that attractive quality coming in. Sometimes it's just the geometry of things. You can make geometrical figures that have, just by virtue of their shape, have effects on the world. And all that is stuff that physics, I don't know, it just doesn't work right. It's too hard.
Do you believe that, I believe that we are a field of atoms, and that there are horizontal and vertical lines of energy, and that you have, your body, when you come in, takes a form into that physical reality that gives you an individual identity. While you're here, excuse me. And I believe that the cohesiveness of that electromagnetic field will determine how quickly you are able to ascend. And the more cohesive it is, the quicker you ascend, the quicker you will obtain access to new knowledge that I believe is encoded into these fields in pulses of time, space, intervals. Do you have an opinion on that?
Well,
does that make sense?
I kind of like the way you phrase that. it makes a certain amount of sense. It's kind of like a laser. You know, when you have a coherent light deal, mm-hmm. and you accomplish all sorts of little things you never would have accomplished before. And I think that's, and that work, that's, to me, it's a way of saying you're focused.
That's exactly right. So the more cohesive your field, the further vertical ascension you will obtain. So the further your vertical ascension, the more aware of who you really are with oneness becomes known. Does that make sense?
Yeah. But the only thing I would suggest, though, is that on the one hand, the more you focus, the more cohesive you are in your whole body, the more you can focus, and the more you can accomplish in some respects in solving certain things. At the same time, in a way, focus is a very very masculine, in a way, type characteristic. There's also a feminine one where you're taking in all this data. You're just bringing stuff in constantly. And you have to have both. You have to be able to have some source to bring in information from whatever source it comes from, and then turn around and focus on it and yield that. You have to always be accumulating information and then somehow incorporating that into your cohesive nature.
Well, I guess the reason I put it that way is obviously I'm a layperson. You know, I'm a litigation person. I know nothing about physics. I've never had a class in high school or college ever in my life because I knew I would fail it and I didn't want to make anything below a B on my report card. But for whatever reason, I have this obsession with physics, and so I want to get some questions that a layperson would... I mean, I want some answers in the form that a layperson can understand some physics and that the intent of the soul is real, and that there is such a thing as consciousness that's other, different and other than the opposite of being in a coma, which is what one MD answered me when I asked that question. And so what happened to me was when I had that near-death experience, or whatever you want to call it, when I woke up the next day, I was a different person. I went to bed that night thinking that when you die, you go to hell and burn up in fire, or you go to heaven and live in a palace. But when I woke up the next morning with no intermediaries, I knew that wasn't true. But I also had a form of giddiness that lasted for about 2 months, where I suddenly felt like I knew the information of all there was, all there ever will be, and all there is at the moment. And it changed everything about me. So information came from somewhere. And I believe that there's a reason for that, and the reason for that is I believe that there are lines of energy, like Hawkins' book, Power versus Force. He's got 11 levels of consciousness. I believe that as you near the cusp or the shift between 100 and 200, for lack of a better way to describe it, something happens, and you sometimes you can jump from the middle of one level to the middle of the next level, or jump from the middle of one level up 3 or 4 or 5 levels, and that happens spontaneously, and there's got to be a reason for that. And I believe that the reason for that is that our electromagnetic field, the frequency of it, changes for some reason. And there's got to be a reason for this other than just philosophical views. There's got to be something that's physics-based that makes this happen. Does that make sense?
It makes absolute sense. And the thing about it is that you're talking about physics in a at a level which is more than it is. It's where the physicists currently practice physics, and the ultimate, you know, level at which physics could maybe ascend to in its own right. But physics just isn't always there. And the other thing is...
That's what's the purpose of this. I mean, every one of the people that I'm having on this interview segment is a physicist, with mm-hmm. the exception of Norm Shealy and Charles Tart. And, I mean, it's important that physics addresses this question. There's a reason from the perspective of physics and the energy fields that we live in that this happens to people. They cannot continue to deny that this happens. and they cannot continue to deny that physics is the underlying answer for why it happened.
I think the thing that's important is that there are aspects of physics which are kind of at the forefront of physics right now, and that takes in so much more than what we normally think of physics, like electromagnetism and things of that nature, mechanics and so forth. There's other dimensions, perhaps, that
that's
are involved here. Superstring theory gets into that pretty well, but a lot of people don't buy into that yet, so it doesn't make any difference because it still could be true. But physics is getting is moving in that kind of direction. They're trying to figure things out of this thing. But it's just a challenge. It's something that, on the one hand, you don't want to go off into some sort of speculation where it's not connected to reality. You can come up with some great fantasy that doesn't really apply. But sometimes you almost have to do that and then just say, well, okay, that didn't work because of the following, but some of these speculations are going to manifest something that's going to really be important.
Would this make any sense to you as a physicist for a reason that happens?
Oh, yeah, I think there's a reason, absolutely.
I mean, like what I said, that our field changes?
Yeah, you can probably...
I'm convinced in my head, and, it's ridiculous for me to even think these questions, because I don't even know what I'm talking about. I just hear it in my head.
Yeah, I understand
And I'm
that.
Convinced. That if I go down to Georgia Tech or somebody that's got some kind of machine that could test this, I am absolutely convinced that it could be detected if somebody would just do it.
Well, it could be detected if they have the right machine. You may have a wonderful oscilloscope, but if it's not, it may not even detect a good radio station. You've got to be able to have a machine that's looking for certain things. And that's how you detect something.
And my underlying purpose for this, if it's true that information is encoded in time, space, intervals, and I believe this. For example, I hear frequencies in my head to the 0.100, and I'm convinced that these frequencies that I hear in my head are the oscillation of organ cells, what they should be if they were at their peak oscillation. For example, I might hear in my head that your prostate vibrates at 16,572.67.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that 0.67, I would think that all prostates are going to vibrate somewhere between 15 and 17,000. I don't know how, I haven't worked on this enough. Depending on also the level of consciousness in the person, because I believe consciousness has to do with the frequency of your electromagnetic field, which would be different in everyone, which would make everybody's prostate different.
Yeah.
But the point that prostate vibrates at that 0.27 tells me that there would be illness in that prostate, because it's at an odd number. And I might hear in my head, the codes for this are through the nerves or across the synapse, that it would go at a pace like this, rat-a-tat-tat, rat-a-tat-tat, rat-a-tat-tat-tat.
Mm-hmm.
There's something there that's telling the world something, that prostate is sick. The way the energy pulses through those nerves across those synaptic gates, that extra tat would tell the world, this man's developing prostate cancer that'll be here in 5 years. So if scientists would understand that the cohesiveness of their electromagnetic field means something to themselves, that if they would make it more cohesive and listen to what it is that we say, that it would unlock the door to information that would come naturally in their head, explaining to them in scientific terms what I'm trying to explain to them in layman's terms. Does that make sense to you?
It makes sense. Keep in mind that... Everybody is actually in a conglomeration of a whole bunch of frequencies, because every molecule of the body.
Of course, every organ would be different.
And that's really what makes you so distinctive. That's why you're so distinct from somebody else, because you've got all these things going at some different things. And then if you come down to maybe an organ might be ideally, if your heart's in really good shape, then all of the molecules in the heart are kind of vibrating at a high level, more or less in a coherent fashion. Or at least that they are at least in harmonics, perhaps the same thing.
Right.
So that's kind of what you mean by harmony, I guess.
That's right.
Harmonious.
So to me, if scientists could understand that what we're trying to say about consciousness is important, then they could unlock the keys to the door that contain the answers they want to know.
Mm-hmm.
And that energy is meant to be at that. You know, if you give a light bulb too much energy, it pops. If you don't give it enough, it's not bright enough. So I think it would be important for healing mechanisms such as the Rife machines and the other frequency-type machines that do healing, because I believe that if the energy goes beyond the vibrational, the stochastic resonance of the cells of that particular organ, there's going to be, say it goes up to 80,000 hertz, but your prostate's at 16,000 something or other.
Mm-hmm.
Where would the difference of that energy go?
Well, a change of frequency is not necessarily a change in energy.
Okay, well then where would the difference, well, let's see, let me look at this in my head for a minute. That it would be putting energy into your body. Maybe I'm not using the right word, but it's putting something into your body.
Mm-hmm.
A frequency.
Well, it could be resonating with it.
Right. So,
you have something going in a frequency variety. It could be audible. It could be sound. It could be electromagnetic. But you get something going along. If it's really a strong signal, you can get it. You can kind of begin resonating with it. That's the point.
So
yeah.
If you had a difference in frequency, say between that 16,000 and the 80, so that's going to be roughly about 60,000 or 50-something thousand, I believe that would cause other organs to get off frequency, because it's not going to be exact to their frequency, and it would make them start oscillating at a different rate than they should be ready. If they're healthy, suddenly they're going to start being a little bit off, and the next emotion that comes in is going to cause that one to start getting sick. Would that be a logical thing to think?
It could be, but it could go the other way too. If you have one thing vibrating at a certain frequency, or much higher than normal, it might draw those others up into their harmonics, so it still works out. I mean, the whole body should be capable of having all the various frequencies harmonious. They should be in different harmonics. It should all should be, not getting any dissonance. And it's when something gets dissonant that you have the problem, and that's usually when something's not quite working. And they can drag the rest of them down,
right.
I think. You know, it certainly does that possibility. But if you have other, if you have devices, I'm not much of an authority on energy machines per se, but anytime you have anything going, quite often it needs to be subtle as opposed to overwhelming.
Mm-hmm.
But you have a certain frequency, and it gets in everything else. I know, for example, that if you listen to Bolero, as that music just keeps, it just keeps going and slowly brings you up to that frequency, people get really interested and excited, and they don't even recommend it for heart patients because, heart may not be able to take that extra beating, I guess.
Interesting. That's an interesting thing. Do you believe that consciousness is a frequency or a field?
Oh, it's probably got to be a whole lot more than just that. I don't even know what, but it's just that seems too limiting. It's probably a little bit of both.
You're the second person.
And then a whole bunch more.
Mm-hmm. Do you believe that a person's level of consciousness would make a difference in the frequency of one's bodily organs?
Oh, yeah.
So everyone's organs would vibrate at a different speed?
Yeah, probably.
So I guess back to what I'm saying, unless you're like me and can hear frequencies in your head, how would you know which frequency to use a machine to heal yourself?
That I don't really know. I think that depends on who's ever come up with a machine. I guess they would have some theory about how that works, but I don't know what those are.
Would you believe that would be of importance in healing machines?
Oh, I think so, yeah.
Frequency related?
I think everything about healing, the biggest mistake we make in healing is that we don't recognize that everybody has their own very distinct, body. Everything is very unique. A medicine that helps one person doesn't help another person at all, or
that's
a therapy
true.
That helps one person just doesn't do a thing for the second person. You've got to know there where that person is, and in all respects, before you can really do the best of healing. Otherwise, you're just kind of taking random shots.
I totally agree. I really do.
And a lot of people, medicine does that a lot.
Yeah, they do. They do that in Western medicine, too.
Oh, yeah. Anyway.
So, we're going to change topics a little bit here and talk about free will. What was your position on free will regarding, do you believe free will exists? Now, let me give you a definition of what I think free will is. If you say to me, and because everybody I can guarantee you is going to say, of course we have free will. But I can tell you for sure that I'm going to be at the grocery store tomorrow at 3 o'clock. I will be there. Well, what kind of certainty do I have that I'm going to be at the grocery store at 3 o'clock? None. I could get in a car wreck. I could get a phone call that keeps me overdue. I could get lost. I could get stuck in traffic. So, as far as I'm concerned, from the point of intent of the Creator, we don't have any free will. We're not driving the car. I believe that we're sitting in a little yellow car seat with a little yellow steering wheel in the back seat of the car, like a 2-year-old, and we think we're driving that car, but we're not. We only find out that we're not driving the car when we get down to the drugstore, where the drugstore is on the left and the playground's on the right, and we start turning our steering wheel to the right, but Source turns it to the left. Only at that point do we find out we're not going to the playground. What is your perspective on that? I guess what I'm saying is, it's like you said, our life is a script. And the Creator says, excuse me, you're going to come into this world as Eva Herr. And that you're going to end up in the world, you're going to start Eva Herr on 164 Midway Drive in Hueytown, Alabama. But you're going to end up Eva Herr at whatever, and that right now is unknown to you, but I know what it is. But you're going to get there whether you like it or not, no matter how many detours you take. You don't have any free will not to end up at that place. What do you think about that?
Well, there's two different aspects. One is that the free will while you're here on Earth and the free will before. In other words,
that's a very good
who wrote
answer.
The script?
There are two of them, you know?
Yeah. In other words, who wrote the script? Did you write? I believe that there's a certain amount of free will that you have in the space before you incarnate, and that you lay out the script of your life to accomplish certain things that you are looking to do. So there's a free will in that respect. That
you
free will, of course,
has to be. You as a creator, or you as an individual soul?
No, as an individual soul. Now, obviously, though, you're also constrained by all the other things that are going on in the world. And so you have to kind of just look at the major script and see how yours can fit inside there. And you go for that. And I think there's a lot of that. There's also something going on. In quantum physics, one of the most important things is probability, that certain things may happen. You know, it's like playing the lottery. You may make it if the odds are against you. But, hey, there's always that chance you will win. Or you'll win, at least a second prize or something of that nature.
Mm-hmm.
And that's low probability, but it does, in fact, happen. The nature of the universe is so much that there is this, always this somewhat a random kind of choice going on. There's these possibilities of the low probability results. And so consequently, your free will is always impacted by that. You're making decisions to do something, but if you decide you're going to the grocery store at 3 o'clock tomorrow, you'll probably be there.
Probably.
Yeah, there is a possibility. You know, you might not. And that's where maybe some of the scripts come in to do something of that nature. You're going down the street and you're saying, you know, if I go down this street, I'm going to be in an accident. I'm going to go down the other street. And you don't.
Mm-hmm.
You never know for sure that was right or not. But it is there. So on the one hand, we can make a lot of choices, but there's always a certain amount of random nature. We can predict things. We can make prophecies. And if you look at all the things that where people have made prophecies, some of them have been pretty good.
Uh-huh.
You know, and a lot of them are garbage, I grant you that, especially most of the modern-day ones tend to be bad, but because everybody's trying to get into the business, I guess. But it, some of them, it really, really, really works. And so there is something going on. There is some major scripts going on, and that we can, as I say before, ad-lib a little bit, do a few things like that, change and drop some lines and whatever. But, you know, that probably that level is the degree to which we believe we can create our own reality. If you really believe in free will, you'll probably have a certain amount of it, probably more so than if you simply do not believe in it at all.
So your bottom line answer to that question would be what?
Bottom line is we have a degree of free will, but there's a whole bunch of it that's, you know, and it's been kind of laid out, either by us at a previous time or, you know, other, other collective consciousness doing it.
Okay. Let's see, another question that I have that interests in me would be, do you think anything really exists but thought?
I'm sorry, I didn't get the last question.
Do you think there really does exist anything but thought?
But what?
Thought.
Thought.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, thought, thought. Oh.
That's a new one I popped in on you. I didn't send you that one. That's one of Daniel Brinkley's ideas, by the way.
Yeah, I know.
He called me the other day and said, that's what you need to ask him.
It probably, it's probably true. I know in physics.
What's probably true? I said, does anything.
That's pretty much it.
Okay.
If you have to assume thought in a very broad sense, it's consciousness or whatever. Matter doesn't have to exist.
There is
some
question.
Physics which is already saying that.
Does matter exist?
No, there is some physics which says matter. No, it's just a bookkeeping. It's just an energy thing. It doesn't really exist. It's just conveniently for us to utilize it in some way because it's kind of temporarily in this mode. We'll use it from there.
And I'm sitting here looking at my grand piano, and I can't imagine that floating around in the universe sometime, you know, when we're all gone.
You need to read Douglas Adams. He's a piano floating around in the universe all the time.
Okay. What would be your thoughts on critical density?
Well, I'm not sure what you mean by that. You mean enough people believe in a certain thing that it happens?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I think that's quite possible because, you know, if you believe that, you know, consciousness is creating things, if you get enough people consciously trying to create something, yeah, it happens.
Okay. What would your opinion be on, I believe that we are on the cusp of a shift in the frequency of the electromagnetic field of the world, and I believe we've got 6 or 8 years before. I don't think we're all going to disappear or anything like that, and I don't think a huge meteor is going to come out of the sky and blow us up. But
oh darn, that's kind of open for that.
That's right, that's the way I'd like to go, just poof and I'm gone and not even know it.
Yeah.
But what I do think is happening is that it's happening right under our very nose right now. I mean, there is an accelerated rate of violence, and there's a reason for that. I believe that reason is the coherence and the frequency of the individual's electromagnetic field, because I think when you get to a certain point, like in Hawkins' book, where your levels of consciousness, that the frequency changes, and suddenly you have new knowledge available, so you have new understandings about what love is or what it is that you are in fact seeking, which ultimately is love. You just don't remember that. So I think that it's happening under our noses right now with warring on our streets with gangs and warring in the schools and warring in the communities and the churches and with scalar energy, and I think that we've got 6 or 8 years to do something about it before we can't turn it back around. What do you think about that?
Oh, I don't think we can turn it around even now. I I realize there's a, you know, the end of Mayan calendar arising, but what that exactly means, I'm not sure.
I don't know. I'm not basing it on Mayan calendar.
No, I understand that, but that's still, that turns out to be about 6 or 7 years. And there seems to be an acceleration of all the things that are going on. Everything's happening a little quicker. There's more and more crises happening, and it's all trying to pull something together in some fashion. But I don't know for sure if it's going to, we're somehow going to enter into a time of peace and prosperity and all that sort of thing.
I think that if we could get science to look into electromagnetic fields and the cohesion of them, and I don't even know how you would do it, but I know the frequency and hertz of this world is changing. I don't even know how to describe it because I'm not educated in that area, but there are, like Hawkins says, 0 to 100, 101 to 200 and so on. There's some kind of range like that that's testable by science, by physics. And we're close to the shift to the next number, whatever that next number might be, whether it's thousands or 10,000, I don't know what it is,
mm-hmm.
but we're close to that number. And it's like the scales of justice. If we go past 50% of that number, we can't turn around. But if it's not past 50% of that number in hertz, we can turn around, and it's done through intention of the mass consciousness. But we've got to somehow prove that that's possible. And the only people to do that, unfortunately, is you and your cohorts. You are the physicist of the world.
Well, the part of it is for the physicists of the world to get their...
Fortunately, we do have a few.
Getting it out into the rest of the world. Because
Claude Swanson. At least we have a few of you that are listening.
Yeah. Well, there's quite a few. And sometimes they don't get as... sometimes they don't really come out of the closet necessarily because, their livelihood depends on not doing so. But it is happening.
It's got to where their world, they're not, their children and their grandchildren are not going to have a world to live in. They've got to stop being selfish.
Oh, well, I understand.
And it took my living away from me.
That's not total selfishness. It's just,
I think I'm crazy.
Yeah. You fight the battles you think you're going to win. And sometimes they're only speculating. They're not even convinced themselves totally to that point that they have to do something. And most of the ones who do things have, are somewhat independent, either retired or whatever, and they can do it. And but it's amazing the degree to which some things in physics which look to be real breakthroughs are absolutely condemned by the universities, for example, that some of these people are working at.
Well, wonder why, because they don't get any money to fund those things. They're not funded by pharmaceuticals.
Now, you don't get money to fund it, but some of the people are just offended. There was a professor at Texas A&M who came up with some deals related to cold fusion, and he received he was a professor emeritus or something, and then he had all these other he was a distinguished professor, that's what it was, and he had about 50 other distinguished professors at the university send him a letter condemning him for practicing alchemy. I mean, and some of them from England, or English, English professors.
I guess that would be those in Hawkins scale that vibrate under 200 or 100.
And there's a lot of people that just do not want to change because anytime you make a change, it takes a certain amount of energy to reorganize. And people don't want to expend the energy.
Well, of course. And it's those people that I would like to put this information in front of.
It probably wouldn't do any good. all you can really do is you can really serve as an example. You can be doing all this stuff. And at some point, one of these days, they're going to look over and say, why are you so freaking happy? And you tell them. But if you just try to push some of these thoughts on other people in physics, you're going nowhere. They simply will not change. I've had a case where a person, a very conservative Republican, I was trying to tell him that Nelson Rockefeller, who's a very liberal Republican, was once vice president of the United States, and he refused to believe it. And it's just obvious that, well, yeah, he was. And the guy would not believe it.
Doesn't matter. It still is what it is.
Yeah, there's a lot of people who do not want to change, and they won't. or something will happen in their life, and maybe their script is set up not to change.
Well, let me ask you, we've got about 10 or 15 more minutes, and one of the things I wanted to be sure and ask you was, for whatever reason, when I woke up from this thing, I suddenly started taking the position that there was 11 parallel universes. Now, who the heck am I to say there's 11 parallel universes? Because I don't even know what I'm talking about. But I also believe that the universes are in a circle, and that they're in a shape of a triangle, so to speak, with the point pointing towards the center of the circle. And at the top, as you would, you know, the frequency lines, the horizontal frequency lines would go solid all the way around all the 11 at the same time, like a record album. And as it would go up, that would be towards the center, that would be your level of ascension. The horizontal frequency lines would be that that maintain the boundaries of physical realities. And my definition of universes would be those things contained within somewhat of a boundary. And the definition of dimensions would be those things that one passes through, because I think that, like, the horizontal frequency line, as your vertical line of ascension goes up, you pass through those horizontal lines of frequency. Where you get to the top of where all the triangles point to a center, and this is on my website, by the way, a picture of it, it would create an inversion that would start the thing all over again, so that it was constant and ever, never stopping, never ending. And I want to know if that, you know, who knows if it's true or not, but why would some Dunwoody housewife come up with this information when she had absolutely no interest in it whatsoever one day, and the next day she was totally obsessed with it? You know, where'd it come from? So if the lines on the record album or the universes, you know, they go, it's in a circle, they never stop, which means you could experience everything going on in every one of those parallel universes at the same time and just not know it. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it's possible. I find it interesting that you had 11 other parallel universes, and if you count ours, it was 12, and of course 12 is very traditionally...
The 12 would be the inversion.
You know, a very important number.
I'm sorry?
12 is the sort of the heavenly, most important number in the heavens, so to speak. It's traditionally, throughout history, there's 12, it was been 12 disciples, 12 months of the year, and so forth and so on. And 12 is a very, very important number.
David Hawkins' 11 levels of consciousness before the inversion to the I Am.
Mm-hmm.
There's the M theory of the unified string theory of Edward Witten.
Mm-hmm.
There is, somebody sent me an email the other day talking about the magnetic forces, gravity, the five basic colors, and something, anyway, whatever, and time, and it all totaled up to 11. There's something about this that's got to be a reason why all these people are coming up with 11 things.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So, do you believe that we experience all realities at one time?
I don't think we normally do. I think it's possible to do it.
See, I don't believe that there's past and future lives.
I think we actually experience one at a time, just because it allows us to kind of focus on and do those things. But that doesn't mean they don't exist, and there's no reason why we cannot occasionally move into them or in and out of them or experience them, or however you want to look at it.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe one at a time, three at a time, whatever.
What do you think on reincarnation? See, I don't believe there are past lives and future lives. If it's true that for whatever reason I get this picture of the universe this way, because I'm not kidding. One day I didn't even know what this stuff was and couldn't have cared less or wouldn't have known where to go and look for it. And the next day I was obsessed with it. So if for some reason this information that's put into my head is true, you know, each line on the record album representing a frequency in hertz, that you would pass through, then, and there really being no time, the record player is playing all 11 songs on the record player at one time. The only way you need to hear all of them is to have 11 needles or 11 physical bodies. Not to mention the dimensions experienced within each universe, which would be each line represented on that record album. Does that make sense?
Well,
one more thing before you answer me.
Okay.
And I think that our window to that, each universe, is your REM sleep.
That would make sense. I like that part. I like that little added feature. I mean, I was thinking, I woke up this morning, had some of the strangest dreams. I said, where in the world? What do you do with these dreams?
I need to send you a copy of my book because I talk about, I don't really have a clue what I'm talking about, but when you read it, it's so freaking logical, it's not even funny.
Yeah. Well, the thing about it, you were talking about, let's say, all these parallel universes, these other 11, and there's a part of us in each of these universes doing different things.
Well, it would have to be if it was in a circle like that.
Because if you look at the evidence for reincarnation, there's really something going on. It, in some respects, reincarnation certainly makes a lot more sense than one life. The one life scenario just doesn't really make a lot of sense. However, what you're kind of talking about in a way is that if I have a memory of other incarnations, if you will, so to speak, maybe I'm just actually just typing into those other parallel universes.
That's what I think.
Yeah, and I think that's an interesting and very plausible theory. And that would, and maybe that's what we're really picking up on, because everything's kind of going on pretty much at once. And so if there's something that we have a phobia here from, that we think of as due to a past life, it's something that's going on in another parallel universe, and we're simply picking up on that, because the 12 souls, so to speak, are the 12 subsets of souls, are connected throughout these parallel universes, and so we do pick up on those other things. So it does explain dreams pretty well.
And how could it not be that way? If there are horizontal lines, and it's very logical that it would be in a circle, I mean, what else could it be?
It's hard to say, because I always think from the viewpoint, it could just about be anything.
But it wouldn't be anything and be connected like that.
Well, circles have an advantage.
It would have connection points.
You connect it that way. It does work pretty well. But you're also thinking two-dimensionally.
No.
It also
would be infinite. I just left up, we have to get to this part. It also would be infinite in every direction. And it spanned at the rate that intention placed it.
Well, I guess I'm just thinking that,
it would have depth and it would be multidimensional.
However the geometry of it is, you can't limit it to two or three or four dimensions. You've got to go all the way. You could have almost 12 dimensions, and every dimension represents one parallel universe or some such.
That's right.
And so you're connecting in that way.
And those are all
orthogonal. It's very hard to visualize, but that's basically what they're saying in superstring theory. So I think they're using either 10 or in some cases 27.
Could it be an even number? Because then it would collapse.
Well, that's actually a pretty good point. If you had complete symmetry, it wouldn't work as well.
Mm-mm.
So you might not want symmetry.
I think there's also infinite numbers of these 11 parallel universes.
Yeah.
I
don't think there's any limits in any way.
Yeah, I don't either. Anyway, this is about our hour today. And I'd like to thank you immensely for having this conversation with me.
You're welcome.
And just tell you how much I appreciate it, because to me, this topic of consciousness and intention of where we're going in our world is one of profound importance. And, however you want to look at it, I think it's up to you guys as physicists to help change the world.
Well, that's what my website is about, really.
It's a wonderful website. Right?
Yeah, www.alexandria.org.
In fact, I think I told you Larry Burke, who I got connected at through Marilyn Schwitz, emailed it to me one day, and that's how I found out about it. So thank you, and I hope you'll converse with me again.
Okay.
Agape.
Matthew, thank you.
Bye-bye.